Today, we are down the rabbit hole again. Is the economy stupid? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Well, today I am joined by a friend of the show, George. And George and I are going to have a bit of a, well, a probably reverse conversation, because there are some really important questions that we need to understand, which is, why are things the way they are? And today we're going to tease out some of those and try and really get to the bottom of how come, for most people, the economy is simply not working. George, how are you going?
Good. I'm good, Martin. This is going to be an interesting show, this one, because it looks like the academia and conspiracy theories are kind of starting to merge a bit.
Well, it's very interesting that when I talk to some academics who are within the system, they tell me that they're constrained about how much they can say about how things are really working. And people like Steve Keen, for example, or Michael Hudson, who are very much not in the mainstream, find it quite difficult sometimes to engage, because quite often people who actually are asking some deeper questions are actually outside the system rather than in the system. So the system has a very interesting way of effectively cohering ideas that are safe and secure and don't rock the boat, you know. But anything beyond that, oh, it's a conspiracy theory. When, funnily enough, conspiracy theories sometimes cohere into something a little bit more clear. And so what I want to do today with you, George, is to kick around some of these things. And I think to start with, I just want to ask you a very simple question, all right? I have here a $100 Aussie bill, okay? Now, if you were to look at this closely, and if you were to run this over time, you would actually see the number on this bill going down. Well, it doesn't actually change. But the value of it, what you can buy with it today relative to last year, is less. And, of course, this process continues. So there is a massive asset bubble going on at the moment. Why? Because we've got massive amounts of liquidity. But the liquidity flood that we've got, and it's global, is reducing the effective value of this. So when you're holding money, what you're doing is seeing its value consistently eroded. Now, how many times have you heard people talking about this? Not many, in my view.
No. I've seen it. I think, I'm trying to remember who the politician was. It was a doctor in the US who spoke to Ben Bernanke, and he was holding a silver dollar. And he said, he talked about time and how that silver dollar could still buy the same amount of fuel, and yet the US dollar was, you needed more US dollars to buy fuel as time passed by. Ben Bernanke said, well, you can always buy euros. And I thought, well, isn't that funny? Because all around the world we have a fiat currency system, and euros and US dollars, and as a matter of fact, all the currency, from what I can see, is working under the same system with nothing to back it up. And yes. I think that's why you've got a number on a note. The problem with, I think, the world is we come in with this world idea that we're working for an income, when in actual fact what we really want is an outcome, not an income.
Yeah,
and so we work more and more for these worthless pieces of paper called currency to get that outcome, but now we're having to work a lot more to get an outcome than we used to.
And the point there is that, you know, often people say, well, asset price growth is good. You know, the house price is going up, the value of my investments are going up, the value of companies are going up. But no, not really. What it means is that effectively the value of your dollar is going down and down. Now, of course, if you have a digital dollar, like a, you know, digital euro, which is coming in soon, what that means is they'll be able to actually physically reduce the value of the dollar, right, as it goes down. But when it's written on a bit of paper, right, your $100 today buys less. Now, there are two factors driving it. The first is governments are borrowing more and more and more. So if you look at global debt, it's absolutely massive in terms of government borrowing. You know, the US is leading the way, but China's also borrowing big. So that the first part of it is government is printing more money, more money, more money. And of course, they use the central banks to do that, which means that there's more liquidity flooding in. And then there's a magnifying effect because we've got the banks who are actually chasing higher asset prices by effectively lending more money for mortgages. And so every time they write a loan, they create more money, which basically creates more liquidity. So the very function of banks lending and chasing asset prices up means that they can actually lend more, which puts more liquidity in the system, which means that asset bubbles get even bigger. And the reason we've got asset bubbles from gold through to Bitcoin, from property through to shares, is because of this massive growth in liquidity. But as you say, the effective practical outcome is that households effectively have to work ever harder for ever less, even if the number on the paycheck goes up, because the inflationary consequences of that are seen through inflation, which, by the way, is not measured properly and is real inflation is a lot higher. But I want to underscore this long-run devaluation of fiat currency is a core issue, which is something which people don't understand yet, for me, is one of the about five principles we're going to touch on today that help to explain why the economy is bust.
Commonwealth countries or Western countries around the world are going through this money printing binge. And I would, I can give you a parallel to that, and that is the Japanese economy in the late 80s, when they had this massive real estate boom, which they couldn't do any wrong. They called it the tiger economy. The media love terms that kind of make you feel like there's a thrill of growth. And they always talk about growth. But of course, then eventually the whole thing fell to pieces. And the Japanese worker today earns enough money to live and work, and that's about it. And they live in small apartments. They don't have a lot of, they don't have the ability to kind of climb their way out. And government also has aligned itself with large corporations. So I don't want to say the word, but I think, you know, you could say the word if you like, Martin, of when governments and corporations align themselves together. I think that we're repeating what they did in the late 80s. The Western world is actually going through that process now. And what does that mean? It means that people are falling further and further behind. And while they want an outcome rather than an income, I think the outcome is becoming further and further out of reach because they work for those fiat currency notes, the $100 bill you just showed me. I think that's where we are. And seems to me like this is all coming from one central point. Somebody's actually created this hyper money printing. And I think it's deliberate, by the way. You probably agree with me. Over to you, Martin.
Yeah, I do think it's deliberate. And of course, the naive assumption that, well, we can have a little bit of inflation in the economy and actually that's good. That's what central banks are doing. That originated, by the way, in New Zealand some years ago, the 2%. It sort of just magically appeared from nowhere. But basically what we have is we have a few, well, let's call them initially multinational players, you know, large corporates who have a set of interests that are not necessarily aligned with the interests of ordinary people. But we also have a whole bunch of non-elected entities, World Economic Forum and a few others that we could talk about, who have a very particular view of the way the world should work. And it's a very technocratic view of the world. And if you listen carefully to what they've said relatively recently, they've said two things. The first is you'll own nothing and be free. Well, basically that means you'll be renting everything for life. And the other thing that they said, and very, very interestingly, very recently, is that there are a bunch of people who are effectively meaningless and unimportant. Now, they haven't quite used those words, but what they have really said is that we've got a bifurcation going on here between some people who are doing very well and profiting quite nicely from this current structure that we've got, but they've also now admitted there's a whole bunch of people who really are not doing that well, but they're not really that important, and therefore, you know, we don't worry too much. And they talk about the rise of AI and the way that AI will reduce jobs. That means that more people will have nothing much to do and things like that. Now, my point is, there are some people who are non-elected who are making some of these statements, and then through the various government structures around the world, you know, top down, the World Economic Forum, Davos, all those things, are actually putting a whole bunch of ideas into politicians' heads that actually then the politicians think, oh, that's a good idea, we'll run with that. So I've got a problem with that, and I've got a problem where a lot of those ideas are being created in the minds of the wealthy few. And if you think of Davos as a, you know, classic example, big corporates that we touched on before, and these non-elected government bodies, or whatever you want to call them, get together and talk about all this stuff, and then say, this is the way the world is going to be. So I've got a problem with that. They're non-elected, and they're not actually in looking after our own interests. So that's my sort of second point. There is actually not just happenstance. It isn't just an accident. There are a series of events happening and a series of things happening that have been mapped out and are being effectively imposed on us without, I think, we, the people, being asked about it or even consulted.
We can close the show now. I'm only joking. No, there's more to say. No, you're right, Martin. What I've seen since 2020, while we had COVID, etc. By the way, when COVID came along, I believed it was a massive psyop, which means I was one of those conspiracy theorists. They called us far right wing, racist, white supremacist, anti-vaxxers. I thought, geez, that's a hell of a lot to put onto one person. But yeah, I'll wear that as a badge of honour. but isn't it funny? In Melbourne, I can tell you there's been a hell of a lot of building going on in the city. That money had to come from somewhere. And now we've got the state government in Victoria who's accumulating a massive debt over the taxpayers of the state. And where's that money gone? In all sorts of infrastructure. We've been told it's all for our own good, etc. But then the term 15-minute city comes up, and you start to think, there's a lot of people that are going homeless, and there's all these high-rise buildings that have appeared out of nowhere. Maybe the plan is to stick those homeless people into those tall buildings and create their digital prison, that's what I see. Hence digital ID and then, of course, cashless society would be next, obviously. And then once you have a digital note or digital currency, you have full control over the people that you rule over. That's what I see. I could elaborate a bit more, but somewhere outside of our democracy, well outside of it, there seems to be a group of people that have a bit of a power play. And they've got such a power play that the average citizen is not told about it, but they're slowly waking up little by little. That's what I see.
Well, I agree with you in this whole digitalization and, you know, ID control, login with your digital ID if you want to go onto the internet and all those sorts of things. That's all part of the same issue where effectively ideas are being filtered and access is being controlled by somebody who knows best, of course. And, you know, sometimes we talk about the idea of people being treated like kids, and I think there's a lot of that going on, and that means that somebody thinks they know better. Well, why do they know better? Well, they're not elected necessarily, but they still think they know better. I've got a problem with that. And I agree with you on the high-rise construction that's being thrown up all over the place, very poorly constructed. very limited ability to get around, you know, less car parking spaces, et cetera, et cetera. So 15-minute cities, all of that stuff is part of this idea that we need to control more. And if we have full control, then we'll it'll be better for everybody. Well, no, it'll be better for a few who can, you know, ignore it, but for most people who can't. The other interesting observation, which I want to bring in at this point is, and this is my third angle, we are being given a lot of false statistics. So one of the things that I come to quite often is looking at the inflation data. And it's very interesting to me that the inflation data and the unemployment data and a lot of the other statistical information that we are actually being fed from the official statistical bodies like the ABS in Australia or the BLS in the US are actually, well, flawed. And it's very interesting. Did you see that the ABS recently announced that they would stop issuing some of their statistics because they didn't actually trust their own surveys, which I thought was interesting. We had, of course, the BLS making a major revision to the employment statistics in the US, such that Trump fired the head of the statistical unit and is now putting somebody else who's got a different view of statistics. My point is, the official statistics that we are getting are very partial and very filtered. To give you the CPI one, CPI, you know, is an average, but we know that real inflation is a lot higher. I see that in my surveys and when I talk to people. We know that the employment statistics is mashed based on a certain definition of employment, which is very narrow. And if you look at Roy Morgan's alternative report on the employment in Australia, unemployment rates and underemployment rates are much higher than the official statistics. So my point is, we can't necessarily believe the official statistics that are actually being produced by the statistical bodies and others. Quite a few people, of course, produce their own statistics, like some of the big property portals producing property price information or things like auction clearance rates. Well, guess what? That information is pretty much rubbish because they make certain assumptions as to how the information should be presented, which isn't necessarily true. And then they write big articles about it. So we've got an information problem at the moment. And then that is magnified by the fact that the media pick this stuff up and just parrot it back at us without due rigor. So we don't really have a lot of critical attention being paid to the information. It's just the parroting of the same stuff. So if you think about this sort of third force, it means that one, we're being fed false information potentially, and two, the media is amplifying that, which means that we are finding it harder and harder to find what is true.
Well, I agree. And isn't it interesting how they mention disinformation, misinformation, conspiracy theorists. And I just find it incredible watching the way the media reported over the period of COVID. And they made sure when they said that people who had had vaccine injuries or passed away were only the unvaccinated, not the vaccinated. The vaccinated had no issue at all. I'm sitting there watching all this and I'm horrified. But the thing was that to sit there quietly and watch what was happening and then to actually strongly suspect that this was a psyop on the whole world, and then you talk to people, and some I found people who actually were awake and said, no, I agree with you, and other people were saying, oh no, we've got to do something, we have to protect ourselves. And they really, they pushed us into a corner where they divided us against each other. And slowly, 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 there's more and more people who are going towards the conspiracy theorists' points of view as they start to ask more questions. And the media, mainstream media, won't give them any answers. Of course, there are certain bodies like Digital Finance Analytics that does a very good job of giving them valuable information. Well, you do a good service, Martin. And you've got some very interesting people that come on to your show as well. And I think that that's the sort of information that people are looking for. But I was going to mention Rockefeller. And he was the one who set up the United Nations. And he would never want to be in government, because if he was in government, he'd be voted out, he'd never have any control. But by setting up bodies like the United Nations, and we've got the World Health Organization, We've got the World Economic Forum. We've got the World Trade Organization. Notice they all have three letters, like CEO, CFO, WEF. Isn't it interesting that they seem to like threes? These are people who are controlling where we're going and how. Well, I can't understand how a country like Australia, or any country for that matter, wouldn't want to have its own manufacturing. But we've been sold the idea that we can send the manufacturing off to a third world country which has cheaper labour, and that will benefit everybody and it'll lift everybody's out of poverty. But all I see is everybody going into poverty, not coming out of it, and that can only last so long. Now, how are we able to pay all this back? Because if we don't have much in the way of an income, and what incomes we do have, based on this $100 bill you just mentioned, which is slowly losing its purchasing power, so we're slipping further and further behind of having our own freedom, our own choices, and we're slowly being cornered into a position where government and corporations have control, and small businesses and independent people have less control. That's what I see.
Right, and that takes us then nicely on to the next big force, which are these large corporates, and the fact that the corporates are very much in hand, I would say, you know, hand and foot, cahoot, whatever you want to say, with government. And of course, governments are very scared of some of these corporates. And, you know, there are some consequences. So if we give you an example, CBA just reported a massive $10 billion profit. Now, it's interesting that they were able to increase their margins over the last year. And they do that, of course, because they're lending more and more for housing and houses and mortgages. And that's where a lot of their money is coming from. Now, that's not necessarily good, because what it means is that, of course, more Australians are paying more for their banking than previously. CBA's closed bank branches. There was an inquiry which highlighted the damage that was being done with branch closures. Funnily, that report, when it was released from the Senate, didn't go anywhere, because the government actually has chosen to ignore it because they're on the side of the banks rather than the side of ordinary people. That's just one example. Another example is the energy conglomerate, particularly the gas conglomerate, those big organisations who are taking our gas from Australia, exporting it, and then, remarkably, the price we pay for gas in Australia is the full international price, which puts our energy prices through the roof, which then means that households can't find wherewithal to pay their energy bills properly. But more importantly, the cost of energy for industry is so huge that now we're seeing closure after closure of manufacturing in Australia. Intercept Pivot, for example, in an explosives area up in Brisbane being one of them, and many others too. And we're seeing more and more of the energy-starved corporates not being able to get through and closing. So that is reducing the economic breadth of Australia. And if you look most recently at the breadth indicator, and they publish it quite frequently, you can see that Australia's continued to come down the list. We're way down the list now. Sure, we do a bit of mining, and we have for the property sector, but that's about it. So we've got a very, very narrow-based economy, but those corporates are doing very well. And you can look at the Coles and the Woolworths. They've got huge profits. Why? Because they're still, well, price gouging. There was a recent report from the Productivity Commission suggesting that that was the case. So we seem to have the situation where a lot of these corporates are actually able to just do what they want. And quite often, of course, we only have one or two, you know, we have one or two airlines, we have one or two big supermarkets, we have a small number of banks. It's like this concentration is part of the story. Now, the point is, the government is quite happy with that. And it's interesting that even APRA, the regulator for the banks, said some time ago they were much happier with a small number of large players to regulate rather than a large number of small players to regulate, because it's easier for them. But is it the right outcome for Australians? No, because if you look at the profitability of our banks, they're stronger than almost any other banking sector in any other Western economy. And why? Because households are paying more. So we're paying more for banking services, we're paying more for insurance, we're paying more for food, we're paying more for pretty much everything. So there's another set of factors there. And then if you overlay one other one, which I want to come on to, the corporates, we've got big food and we've got big pharma. you know, big food basically selling us rubbish stuff, a lot of processed food, a lot of stuff laced with salt and sugar. And then we've got big pharma who's now coming in and selling us weight loss pills. And so basically you've got this sort of the yin and the yang, right? Big food, big pharma working together at the expense of Australians again. So it seems to me that we are cannon fodder in all of this. And so it's no wonder that ordinary Australians feel pretty helpless and confused and frustrated with the way the economy is going.
Well, I agree with you, Martin. I'm just going to find you something. This is for the viewers to look at. I don't know if you can see it, but there's this application. It's called Yuka. It's got a little carrot on it. You tap on it, hang on, and it gives you, it uses your camera to actually scan barcodes of products. And you'd be surprised what you can find. I'd highly recommend that to the viewers, because you're right, the food products in our Coles and Woolworths, for example, in Australia, probably you'd have your own chain of supermarkets in the UK. But I showed somebody something on sunscreen which had the Cancer Council on it, and I when I saw them applying it, I thought, oh, can I barcode scan that sunscreen? Oh, sure. And I barcode scanned it. It got a 6 out of 100. It had carcinogenic additives inside the sunscreen. I showed this to the girl, who was an academic, very proud of her position, and she said, I don't trust that application, I trust the Cancer Council. And I thought, well, from what I can see, there's so much information that's hidden and disguised and buried by government and departments that it actually sends chills down my spine to think that this is the sort of behaviour that's taking place today. Now, I was going to bring up something. I mentioned Rockefeller and how he set up the United Nations, and they have this thing. I'll read you the headline. It's called The Rockefeller-Rothschild Secret Government Plan. Now, I'll just read you a little bit, but people can find that. They may not find it on Google. They might have to use an alternative search engine. But I'll read you just a little bit of what they have to say. An illusion, it will be so large, so vast, it will escape their perception. Now, their perception being the majority of the population, us. Those who will see it will be thought of as insane. Well, I've copped that a bit. We will create separate fronts to prevent them from seeing the connection between us. We will behave as if we are not connected to keep the illusion alive. The goal will be accomplished one drop at a time, so as to never bring suspicion upon ourselves. This will also prevent them from seeing the changes as they occur. We will always stand above the relative field of experience, and we know the secrets of the absolute. We will work together and will remain bound by blood and secrecy. Death will come to those who speaks. We will keep their lifespan short, their minds weak, while pretending to do the opposite. Now, I think that's kind of enough, but basically, isn't it interesting? We're talking about how our democracies and our governments are behaving. And I've just read you a little bit about what is happening through people at the... Well, we're talking about people who could own some countries with the amount of wealth that they have. And they certainly have a vested interest in taking us somewhere. And you probably remember George Bush Sr. talking about the New World Order. I think it was in 1991. This amount of control, centralised in the hands of a few, digital currency, digital ID, smart cities, is starting to look more and more Orwellian as we go, and it's starting to look like we're slowly being constrained while everybody's going to work and probably starting to think, geez, things are getting a lot harder today than they were. But there's more people who still believe in the system, but the system to me seems to be falling apart.
Well, yes, indeed. And it takes me to my next point, which is that the system is basically predicated on one simple thought too, which is you are the product. So the point there is that, you know, if you want to actually live somewhere, you have to either pay rent or you have to pay a mortgage. And guess what? These days, the mortgage or the rent takes a ever larger proportion of your income to be able to just find somewhere to live. If you actually are operating online, the information as to where you go, what you do, what you look at, what you're interested in purchasing is all being harvested and sold. You are the product. And of course, more and more, if you think about what banks are doing, they're extending the terms of loans. They're finding more ways to lend you more money. Going back to my liquidity point earlier on, they want to do that because they can expand their balance sheets and therefore expand their profitability. But you are the product in the process. And I think a lot of people, when they use social media, are not understanding just how much they are the product. And of course, the big tech firms, you know, they're quite transparent about the fact that they capture and sell information about you and what you do. But it's much broader than that. And so from all sorts of perspectives, individuals are effectively the lab rat running in the middle of this weird system that is being imposed without actually understanding the full consequences. And that's no surprise then that housing is now astronomically expensive, particularly in Australia, that we've got a politically unstable environment with high migration. We've also got many, many people living in tent cities and, you know, in cars and all sorts of things like that. And here's a little interesting thought, George. There's a census coming up next year. I wonder whether the ABS will give census forms to those people living in tent cities and in cars, or will they be excluded completely?
I think they'll be excluded completely. That's what I think. This is the what I see, the New World Order that I spoke about, I believe is real. I do believe there's a small group of people that rule above us all. Our education system, and I've seen it, I mean, you can go up to somebody who's academic, i.e. yourself, but you're pretty unusual because you actually ask questions. A lot of academics don't, but you do. That puts you in a very interesting position. I wasn't an academic. I didn't go to university. I'm not unhappy about that. I could see things in a different way when I worked at the ABC. And I think people used to kind of look at what I do and they think, oh, that's a strange way to do it, but it seems to work. Well, I didn't come from that kind of regimented training that they had, and consequently I was able to design a cabling system that was for ENG cameras that is being used all around the world even today. Wish I'd patented it. It would have been a great, I wouldn't have been sitting here, I'd be probably sitting on a boat somewhere. but look, I think that this is it's like a noose that's forever tightening. Now Phil Anderson, you remember speaking to Phil Anderson? He talks about share market economics, property share market economics. His prediction is by mid-27 we'll see the biggest housing market crash, I think, in the history of Australia, and I believe he's right. It may happen before then. And he suggested, well, sell your home and put it into cash and put it into a bank account and then you'll be able to buy back in. But given that banks can confiscate your money, I don't think that that's such a good idea. So people are trying to park their money or get out of the system so that it's not connected to the centralised banking system. So things like Bitcoin come along and people investing or buying, I wouldn't call it investing, I'd call it protection, buying gold and silver, for example. Why is there such an increase? I don't believe it's demanded supply. I think the banking system is actually playing around with the pricing there. But I'd rather have it in my hand than to park it into a bank that can actually legally take your money as of 2018 under Morrison Turnbull when they passed the bank bail-in legislation. And that's when, if they did do this, APRA is meant to come in and protect you. But John Adams has told me that APRA is under some sort of investigation. So that doesn't look like such a good thing. It looks like all the safety checks and all the protection has been taken away and given into the hands of these monopoly groups such as banks and large corporations and government. So the people really don't have much anywhere to go other than to work and try and keep up with a system that looks like it's ready to implode. And I think it will implode eventually. So what do you do to protect yourself?
Well, I think it's very difficult to know what you can do. I mean, the first thing I think is it's important to ask hard questions. And, you know, some of the questions we've been touching on this evening are ones that people should be thinking about rather than just saying, I feel there's something wrong, but I'm too busy, you know, trying to sort of just get by and I don't really, you know, want to ask the question. It goes right back to the Matrix, you know, the Matrix. Do you want the blue pill or the red pill? Do you really want to know what's going on? Or do you just live in your happy little world and hopefully just to get by? Now, there are many people who say, look, it's, you know, too hard and too difficult to think about this stuff. So I'm going to continue to work with Inside the World that as I understand it. I've described previously on our shows this idea of a worldview. In other words, what are the sets of rules and assumptions that define the way the world works for you? Everybody has them, like it or not. You've got a worldview. You've got some assumptions about the way the world works. But what if those assumptions are actually not right? And that's what we're trying to get to. Maybe some of the assumptions are actually not fully the way that you think they are. And you only have to look at the practical outcome of all this. We've actually got a massive bifurcation at the moment. We've got a relatively small proportion of the population who's very affluent and doing very well and is really enjoying home price booms and equity market booms. They're earning a lot of money and they think, oh, it's great. But then you've got a larger proportion of the population who are really up against it. I see that in my surveys, with cash flow pressures, with housing pressures, with often making hard choices between do I pay the rent or do I get my teeth fixed, for example, or, you know, do I eat well or do I eat cheaply and what are the consequences of that? People are making very hard trade-off decisions at the moment. And, you know, more and more people are beginning to say, well, hang on a moment, this doesn't seem to be right nor fair nor appropriate. And it's not what we voted for, and yet this is what democracy has brought us. So the political system is part of the problem. The economic system is part of the problem. The international overlords, whoever they are, is part of the problem. And the net result of all this is that people feel disenfranchised. They feel under pressure. It creates social consequences as well. And one of the reasons why we're seeing a very strong correlation in our analysis between financial stress and other factors like violence in the community and other criminal activity in the community. There are consequences of doing all of this. And then the sort of final point to bring it back is, are those who are elected representatives part of the problem or part of the solution? Because so far it seems to me that they are propagating some of the things that we've been talking about and supporting them. And my conclusion is that a lot of those politicians are in that few percent who are doing really well. And of course, they'll have their pensions, et cetera, when they leave politics. So to an extent, the system is rigged in favor of the few, against the many, against the ordinary business, the ordinary household. And yet there are really important questions that we should be asking about charting the future and perhaps making different decisions. But frankly, the chances of getting those discussions going are becoming more and more limited because, of course, there is more and more censorship now being spoken about and will be imposed.
I agree with everything you said. I'll just take you back to a thing you mentioned, I think it was in 2023, the K-shaped recovery. Was that the... Now, isn't that interesting? Because when that K-shaped recovery happened, all the big businesses did very, very well, and small businesses and working classes just kept sliding down. As the housing market keeps booming, the separation of incomes to cost of living through higher property prices, which leads on to inflation. That's what I see. So I'm not going to say it in an academic way, but that's what I see happening. So those people who are working as waiters in small cafes, etc., cleaners, even middle class people, are finding it much, much harder if they're working for themselves. But if they work in a large corporation, or they work in government, or the education system, or if they're working in the pharmaceutical industry, or they're doctors, again, it brings me back to the Rockefeller secret covenant, because Rockefeller was very, very smart. He wasn't just an oil man. He got into health, education, government. And now that makes the oil monopoly, so-called cartel oil monopoly, look like chicken feed compared to what they've been able to achieve. That's the world I see today. I remember when people would refer to doctors and they'd refer to these people called quacks, what I call natural healers, or a chiropractor. They always looked at like, oh, they're strange, you don't want to go to them. Now, interestingly enough, these messages were getting out somehow. I think you'd probably have to, wouldn't have to go far to look at mainstream media. So I believe government does more than just propaganda. I think that you mentioned that violence was on the increase. Well, what's to stop government actually hiring crisis actors to make these things happen? Adolf Hitler, didn't he go on a campaign of propaganda to try and to convince his people to follow him? And we don't have to go too far to work out where that, the outcome of that. But I think that's the kind of world we're living in. To put it bluntly, I call it fascism.
Yeah, well, it's certainly not democracy in the strict sector sense of the word. And, you know, the fact is it doesn't matter almost who you vote in, you know, is it? Somebody famously said, their two cheeks are the same bum. It doesn't make a lot of difference. They have the same alignments to corporates. They have the same agenda, which is effectively, you know, a big Australia, except, you know, all of those things are there. So, yeah, the political system and processes are not really very strong at the moment. And, you know, I think I would say that's true in the UK. It's certainly true in Australia and in other countries too. The other point, of course, here is that the education system is also, as you mentioned earlier on, part of the problem too, because a lot of the time, some of the issues that should be being discussed and are part of the education process aren't now. You know, the curriculum has been tightened and tightened and reduced and reduced. And I'm interested to note that the recent UK A-level results are transpiring that less and less people are now doing humanities. More and more people are being directed into, you know, science and technology because they are seen as the productive bits of the economy. So the people who are trained and being trained to ask the hard questions are actually becoming less and less appropriate. I mean, I did philosophy at university, and for me, philosophy is a critical question because it makes you ask the really, really important question as to why things are the way they are. And when I apply my philosophical mind to the latest statistics on the working hours, the average working hour dollars now, according to the ABS, shows that males working in the public sector on a weekly basis are earning significantly more than those in the private sector. And females in the public sector are earning as much as the males in the private sector. So you can see here that we've got, again, this bifurcation. We've got an ever larger government sector growing, government debt's growing. We talked about that earlier on. That's why the deficit is a problem and why the inflation pressures are still there and why the value of the dollars are going down because of the higher liquidity. They're borrowing more. That cost of borrowing means that we have to pay higher taxes. Those higher taxes, which are still rising and will continue to rise, are being imposed on households, which means that if you look at disposable monthly income, it's a lot worse than it used to be because people are having to pay more in taxes to be able to actually cover the costs of bigger government. And yet this bigger government is running a whole agenda which is not necessarily in line with the interests of ordinary people. And that's where I sort of get to in all of this, which suggests that if you actually follow through on this, then they want you to simply be the lab rat that runs on the treadmill faster and faster and faster, paying your taxes, going to work to survive, to go to work to survive, and pay back enough to the government so that the government can go on growing and expanding. And that is the vision of the future that I see at the moment, unless we start asking a whole bunch of different questions and say, hang on a moment, it doesn't have to be like this. There are alternative models. There are alternative ways of thinking about the future, which could actually benefit ordinary people a lot more than the current ones. And that is the conversation which I'm trying to sort of pursue on this channel, because I think it's the only way that we can take this conversation to a better place. Because if we go on doing what we've been doing for the last 30 to 50 years and expecting a different outcome, we're kidding ourselves. The truth is that if we go on doing what we're doing, corporates will win, government will win, ordinary households will lose.
Exactly right. Australia is a rich country, one of the richest actually, and yet we have poor people in it. So what's happened is that the income to housing ratio has grown ever bigger in its divide, and that's why we've got higher costs of living, and that's why we've got people falling further and further behind. And the governments certainly don't listen to us, and they don't do anything for the people to improve their situation. I even mentioned to an upcoming federal politician that we should change the tax system to a transaction system. And being a typical politician, he immediately responded as a politician would, we don't want more taxes. And I said, I wasn't talking about more taxes, I was talking about changing the tax system. And he said, oh no, we don't want to do that. And I'm thinking, well, of course not, because the way it works right now, it works for the people at the top and it doesn't do any good for the people at the bottom. So division is what works best. While we can argue points and talk about transgender this and inequality and how home ownership is now not considered desirable, that people who might own a home are basically taking away the future of the new generations coming up. So again, it's division. Not logic has got nothing to do with this. It comes down to emotional responses, etc. But I can see what's going on, and I think that most people are trying to work out how they're going to pay their bills and how they're going to survive. And I think that if this continues, even people who own homes will eventually lose them because they won't be able to afford to pay their rates.
I just want to make one final point, and that is that there is something called performative politics. And performative politics is where they do things for effect. They do things because they want to be seen to be doing something, but not really want to do something. And this upcoming productivity love-in next week is a great example of that, where we know that the Treasury has already drafted some recommendations for it before the thing has gone on. And Albo has excluded a whole bunch of things around tax reform. But of course, they can claim that they've had this massive talk about productivity, etc., etc. And I am very concerned that in Australia, as well as many other countries, politicians have got to the point where they just want to be seen to be doing things without actually tackling the critical issues that we've been touching on here today. And that, for me, questions the role and function of democracy, and more importantly, to me, questions the credibility of our politicians, which is a very important point, I think, on which to leave the conversation hanging, George.
I agree, Martin. It's been a very interesting episode, this one. I think that for the viewers, all I'll say is keep an open mind. Love your statistics, Martin. I think you're doing a fantastic service, so don't forget to look up Martin's DFA because he's doing a great job. And I appreciate the fact that we were able to kind of connect and come up with this show.
Thank you, George. Well, I've appreciated this as always. And just to say, folks, check out the channel. There are lots of videos there about all sorts of issues to do with the statistics that are produced, the structure of the economy, and the economics and some of the broader issues too. This is a channel where we want to explore some of those issues, give people alternative views, different ideas. We're not saying, you know, that X is right or Y is right necessarily, but what we are wanting people to do is to use the grey matter some more, because that's the really important asset that everybody has, And unfortunately, I feel that rather too many people spend too much time in front of, you know, the Netflix and the other streaming services. But a bit of creativity and a bit of thinking time would, I think, help to perhaps chart our way forward. George, thank you very much. Look forward to the next one. This is Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Cheerio.